Hello, everybody. How are you today? I'm Casey. This is Tomas. We're going to tell you about artichokes today. Did you know did you know that artichokes are grown just south of here, about 30 miles south along the coast? They're a major cash crop, and they're very popular. But we're not really here to talk about real artichokes. What are we here to talk about?
Well, we are going to talk about module in Tizen that we're going to do to make Tizen more secure. And what is actually artichoke? In English, it's artichoke. In Polish, it's kartoch. In Latin, it's cenara. Cenara was chosen as the official name for the module just because, wait, vegetables are healthy. We want to make Tizen secure. Secure means healthy. And cenara in Latin is easy to pronounce for everyone.
Right. There we go. So we didn't use a couple of technologies, the first of which is Polkit.
Yep.
Originally, in our thinking, we had determined that Polkit is the industry standard mechanism for doing application level security, application level access control on Linux systems. But that is a bright light. But what we discovered is that there are some aspects of Polkit that really make it suboptimal for especially an embedded environment. At Intel, we had a project. We looked into alternatives. We came up with a design. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to us, our friends in Poland were doing the exact same. We're actually coming up with the design. We had a face-to-face meeting back in March, and we had a design off where each team got 5 minutes to present what they were proposing, how it was going to work. And a member of my team, Mike Leibowitz, got up, did his presentation. Was it you or a member of your team? Did you
get
up?
It was me.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
Then Thomas got up and presented the exact same design.
Under a different name.
Under a different name, right. So we decided that rather than having a big fight about it, which is the traditional thing to do in that case, that we would actually just cooperate, go with this design, use the Samsung resources to actually implement it. So we didn't use Polkat, which was our design, which was a derivation on Polkit, just like Sangar is a derivation on Polkit. And I'm at the point in the presentation where I stop being able to pronounce English words, but that's okay. I get over it really, really reasonably quickly.
Yeah, we'll go in detail later why we haven't chose Polkit, but first we'd like to show you actually what kind of problem are we solving. Casey, what kind of problem are we solving?
Access control.
Yeah.
The problem is that we have abstract resources defined by W3C, things like telephony, which, show me one. It's like I don't have dev telephony. I don't have the telephony file system. I can't really define this in terms of operating system objects and subjects. I really have to define it in terms of an abstraction, and I have to provide access control over the things that provide that abstraction, which are frequently applications or services. So because you can't do it at the operating system level, you have to do it in the application level, in the service level. And
you probably remember that in Tizen 2.2, there was a solution for this problem. We thought about SMAC. Here is the author of SMAC. So we decided, okay, why not choose a SMAC label for each privilege, a virtual resource, right? And then try to label everything that is combined, that is being used by APIs that are being called that need this privilege. Just let's label it with one label or set of labels and just assign SMAC rules to applications. Well, it worked out. Some products on downstairs that are using this solution. But at the end, it has proven to be a little complicated to maintain it because the policy, SMAC policy, has grown up to enormous sizes.
So, how enormous?
Enormous, giant, you won't believe it, call your mom, whatever, giant sizes of policy. So, Casey.
Yeah, here, almost as big as an SE Linux policy.
Yes, and we don't like that.
Yeah, so I actually had to go in front of a group of people at the Linux Security Summit last year and apologize because I've been spending years railing on them about how big SE Linux policies were. And here we had a SMAC policy that was almost a tenth the size of theirs. And so it's like, that was embarrassing.
And that's why in Tizen 3.0, you will see SMAC free domain policy. Why is it related with this solution, with scenario we are talking about? SMAC policy is meant to be very compact. You have like only documented labels, only few of them that label the entire system. But what about those abstract resources? Since we want it to be easy for each developer to contribute to the platform, we wanted to have a compact SMAC policy, and yet we want to have a solution, a different one, of course, to manage privileges. And that's why we need a Polkit-like solution. And this is the problem we are solving. We need a method to answer the question whether this application under this user can do that, when this word that in the end of the sentence is something abstract.
Right. So what is Cynara then? Why don't we tell these wonderful people what it is?
What it really is, aside of name for a vegetable in Latin. Well, imagine an application and a service. A service is providing something which is privileged, is serving the application. And the service needs to know whether this application has the right to be served. So, Cynara is a library that will be attached to the service process, a policy database that will have the answers that the service may need, and of course our own process that will process, guess what, will process the requests and questions whether application has right to do something that this service provides. Simple as that.
So, what's the application got to do? The application itself needs to, of course, identify what privileges it needs. And it does that using a manifest.
Manifest, yeah.
Right. So when I'm writing the application, I write up my manifest and I say what privileges it is I think I need. And so when you're going to install the application, it's going to come in and ask the user, potentially, should this application be allowed to use telephony or what are some of the other ones? The sound system.
GPS, whatever.
GPS, you know, all of these wonderful things that W3 tells us are actually privileges. And then, of course, when you install the application is going to be assigned a SMAC label that it's going to run with to keep the applications isolated so that angry Twitter doesn't run at the same label as Twitterbirds. So you can protect them from each other.
You may ask the question, why we actually get something from the application? We trust the application so much that we allow it to give us the list of privileges it needs. Simply because this is processed by the installer. Installer is actually putting data into our system, so we can't trust this process. It's already so privileged, it can do virtually anything. So when the package arrives in your operating system, you read the manifest and you have this information, you of course need to have some kind of signature check. For example, widgets in W3C specification have a signature, right? So you can be sure that what you're reading inside wasn't touched by a third party. So you can trust the application at the install time.
Right. You can check whatever signature is appropriate. Sure. What is the SMAC label?
You have the right person
that
to
is,
ask.
Is this an abstract or specific? That is, are you saying, what is this abstract? Oh, it's an attribute. It's a text string. It gets attached to the process. It gets attached to system objects. And the basic rule is that if your label doesn't match, you don't have access. That's actually a SMAC concept. Tizen is using SMAC. But the basic model, that's the basic model. Now, there's also a mechanism for providing exceptions, which is a separate talk entirely. Okay. But the notion here is that if you have a SMAC label, the objects have a SMAC label, you can access them. If it's different, you don't. So isolation is done very easily. We have mechanisms for providing exceptions as well that allows things to share in a controlled way. So what about our applications here? What does an application have to, when I'm writing the application, what do I have to tell the application to do so that Cynara works?
Well, the slide is here for like 2 minutes, so you probably all know. The application has to do totally nothing, since we don't trust the application at runtime. It's only trusted during installation time. Application developers just don't care. They don't need to do anything for apps to be secure on this level. And this is great.
Yay. So how do I, of course, the question on everybody's lips is, well, how do I know what privileges to give the application? And because every application is run with a different SMAC label, and this is part of our W3C requirement that applications be isolated from each other, we can use that information to determine what privileges it has, because the installer will tell Sinara what the label of the application is, and it will say what privileges that application is allowed. And so when Sinara gets a request, or when a service gets a request from a process, you know, from an application, I told you I'd forget words. Okay, when the service gets a request from the application, it knows the SMAC label, so it can then go ask Sinara whether or not that application has access to that service.
Yeah, you may ask us, why SMAC label?
Because it's there.
Because it's there, first of all.
And it's unique to the application.
Yes, we had that approach in Tizen 2.2, and we thought about it. And up till now, IVI and common languages were using one SMAC label for applications user to make it simpler. But to sandbox the applications, SMAC label is an ideal thing. You may ask, why not user ID? Right, Android is using user ID to identify applications.
Well, we're using the user ID to identify
multi-user
users.
Right? Yes, because it's meant for its user ID. So we're not using UID for application determination. It's SMAC label. Simple as that.
So now we're talking. Now we need to talk about the service. Now I'm providing a service. What do I need to do?
Well, first of all, you need to do what you're doing. Right, you're a service. You're serving some specified piece of APIs. So you need
The telephony service.
Yes, so you know you probably need, if your clients call you, hey, Joe, Casey, I want to call someone. You need to know, first of all, the name of your privilege, right? How is in the specification, the name of it is just a string. And you need to identify the applications, right? You need to get the credentials of it. Now, why is credentials a plural version? Simply because we are thinking about multi-user. So SMAC label may be not enough. You may disallow a specific user to use a privilege. For example, your kid to access your PayPal account, for example, right? Let's say we have a PayPal privilege. User may be disallowed to do something where application is actually allowed to do something. So we need to combine those two policies, and hence we need to have credentials, right? And of course, if you have the credentials, identify the application, the user under which it's running, and you know what is your privilege, right? As a service, you can ask Sinara with simple API call, can this guy under this user do this thing?
So I'm the service. All I do is I get the information about the client, and I know what privileges I need. I ask Sinara, and it tells me yes or no.
Yes, of course.
And then I'm happy.
Yes, and that brings us to a few slides about Sinara APIs. They're very simple. Actually, they have two parts. First of all, for checking the privilege, the part we have just told you about. Very simple API. The second part, of course, Sinara, as I mentioned in previous slides, as we mentioned in previous slides, has some policy database. So we need to feed it with data, right? During installation time, we need to input information on which application can do what, right? And these are two parts, like a client and an admin library, that will be provided with the solution. Of course, up till now, we had only alpha version of this module to try to make it work with Crossbook, actually. And the first chosen one was the Synchronous API because it's easier to do, and then we can debug test and check our ideas. Asynchronous is probably needed. We had information like this on the mailing list, so it will be provided, but a little bit later.
Okay, yeah, so this is just so that we can actually have development ongoing, so we can actually make things work, make progress.
Yes.
Make sure we got it right.
Yes, of course. Discussion of the mailing list, by the way, feel free to contribute if you have any questions or ideas how it could be done even better.
So how about if you tell us about how these APIs work, because I don't have a clue.
Well, it's actually pretty simple. You have a library that needs to be initialized. And after you close your process, if you're a service, you need to finalize it, and that's it. And you have one additional function, Sinara check, that gets the application credentials and the privilege requested by the service. That's it.
Okay, so all I have to do is say, gather up the information.
Yeah, and ask.
And I get my response.
Yes, of course.
I'm sorry, this can't be security. It's too simple.
Yeah, but it's that simple, really. Sinara is handling all the decision made from policy on its side. On the service side, you just get the result, whether this client under this credentials and this period of time, right, session ID with this privilege is allowed to do this action. That's it.
Well, that's got to be pretty slow.
No, that's not
slow. Oh, well,
we'll talk about that later.
Okay, yeah. So how about talking about start? How are we going to set things up? So again, we've got the application installer here, right? What's it got to do?
Well, obviously, you remember probably from Tizen 2.21 that the widgets, for example, had a manifest, right? And there was a section with privileges. So In our current basic setup, we have just created alpha version, so-called. You need to tell that this application is using this privilege. You need to have an API to feed the database with this information, right? So it's simple as that. A dedicated library signer or admin that's used only for registering applications privileges. As I mentioned in the previous slide, Cynara only returns to the service result success or no. But we are going to provide extensions to the policy so that you will be able to say a little bit more about it. For example, ask the user, not only yes or no decision, but also ask the user. First of all, it may be required by some government specification, you must ask user, period. Secondly, it may be just better sometimes, for example, if a kid wants to purchase something, provide the password. This is, by the way, what Polkit does.
Another possibility is the car in motion? If the car is in motion, you don't want to grant this privilege.
Yes.
For example, the privilege to shut off the engine.
Yes, exactly. Probably also inputting a lot of data into a form, for example, when you're driving a car is not appropriate, right? So the policy needs to be dynamic. So we are planning to provide an extension mechanism for the policy.
So we talked about this a little bit, but we're going to talk about it a little bit more because it really turned out that we really liked the idea of using Polkit because it's the industry standard. Everybody knows how to use it. A lot of programs are actually putting it in already. And then it's supported, it's upstream. Everybody's, it's got Truth, Beauty, Light written all over it, except that Tomas's team did some performance measurements on it. And it would have been prohibitively slow for any application we wanted to use it for.
Yeah, we tried to dig what's the problem with Polkit, because first of all, we did some stress tests, right? We tried to install like a few hundreds of applications on a Tizen device and check and do a privilege check, right? A simulated privilege check for just yes or no, whether this app can do this thing. And it turns out, first of all, but not most importantly, Polkit is using Dbus, which is slow. Okay, it's useful for some cases, it's easy to use, people may like it or not, it's standardized, okay, Dbus. Second and more important thing, you won't believe, but actually Polkit uses a JavaScript-based policy file. So each time you're adding something to the policy, it's written in JavaScript. And each time you want to ask your policy database for a question, that JavaScript set of rules is being parsed, executed, and if it doesn't match, the second line of the policy gets executed. And since this is actually a full-stop problem in computer science, you cannot choose arbitrarily which one should be executed, right? You need to evaluate, and the cost is linear with the number of applications.
So you're going to run this entire set of programs
yes.
every time you want to do an access check.
Yes, with a few hundreds of applications, we came up to like a few seconds for simple yes or no decision without a pop-up involved. And for a simple yes or no database query, we got like more than 30 milliseconds. Whereas Cynara, our prototype based on Unix sockets with just in-RAM cache memory on the server side took us less than 10 milliseconds. And that can be still optimized with a client-side cache because we can trust services to keep the cache at least, right? So we decided to choose our own solution because Polkit basically APC is actually APC for a database with some extension mechanism. We would have to rewrite everything in Polkit to use it.
So it really turns out that although in principle we would like to use upstream mainline facilities wherever possible, what we've encountered here is kind of the classic case of one where the classic upstream technology is just not right for our application.
Yes.
It won't work on a watch.
Yeah, for example.
You don't want to have 3 seconds between each beep on your alarm.
Yeah, that would make you crazy probably, right?
So what are we going to do with this in the future? How's it coming?
Well, first of all, right now we have Cynara basic API, non-blocking, without extension. So the policy can only say yes or no. Without multi-user support, it's already there. You can link with the library. You can read the wiki page that explains a little bit in more detail. What are the APIs, what are the functions, what is the name of the library, how to input it into your project. Right now we are in a state we are trying to create a dedicated process for Cynara because it is Tizen 2.2, there was already a solution for storing information about privileges. So we reuse that on top of new API. And right now we want to put that thing in a separate process, which is less privileged, of course, because the least privileged principle is the goal for us, Holy Grail. We are in the process of creating a dedicated binary for Sayonara and creating that admin library I just told you about to change implementation of installer applications to use our API, to input, to feed the database with information of the privileged applications. Rest of the stuff that we just talked about briefly is right here. Briefly, months. We are on schedule, I think, right now. By the end of June, we should have those two I just mentioned ready.
Excellent. So,
and we have the entire field of artichokes here.
That's right. Yeah, go on. So,
that's it on our side.
That's all we have to say, unless, of course, we haven't said something that you want to know about. In which case, this gives you the opportunity as the audience to ask us as the speakers questions.
Yeah, we listen.
So who wants, okay, Mr. Eager over here. So the question is, what are the contents of a smack label? Right, a smack label is a text string. That's it? Nope, it's a text string. So if you want it, so when smack does an access control decision, it compares the smack label of the process with the smack label of the object, which could be a file, for example, the best example. If they match, access is granted. If they don't match, then we look at the set of rules. We have a set of rules, which are the exceptions to that basic smack policy. And if there is an exception that allows the access you're requesting, then access is granted. So smack labels are just text strings. They don't have any meaning. They're not parsed. It's just it's just for comparison. The original smack labels were actually 7 characters, so that they would fit in into a long integer. So you could just do an integer comparison and make them really, really fast. But you have to be really, really old to think that 7 characters is enough to identify something. So then they got it bumped up to 23 because that's what would fit into a SIPSO header, and then it's up to 256 because when you're automatically generating smack labels, tools tend to like longer things. So we have 256 characters. They're stored efficiently in the kernel, so you're not actually comparing text strings very often. But really, a smack label is just a text string. It's just something to compare against another text string.
Yes, but what is also important is that in 3.1, we have a policy that's defining exactly the shape of the string. So if you are a developer, a platform developer, and you would like to contribute to the operating system, you're adding a new service, for example, right? You need to check Free Domain Wiki page made by KC and check what kind of smack label in this layer of operating system is permitted for you. So for example, applications get like user colon colon app colon colon, some ID unique for application. Everything is precisely written or will be written, because actually the last part about uniqueness of applications, smack labels, is just being done right now. We are actually in the process of making this switch. But it will be documented, unlike in 2.21, when pretty much everyone chosen their own label and it actually grow to enormous sizes. It worked. It was a solution for our problems. But since we're going to level up it further ahead, right, we want to make it more compact and documented.
Yeah. For Tizen 3, we're big into documenting how things should be done. Next question. So the question is, what assures there's no conflict between labels? Not sure I understand the. So first off, changing labels requires privilege. So as an unprivileged application, you don't get to pick your label. When we're developing the platform, we're explicitly defining what labels should be used for what purposes, where they should be, you know, how they should be used, what processes have what labels, what files should have what labels. When an application is installed, the installer, which is a privileged program itself, because it has to do signatures and all that sort of thing, will also define smack labels, and it will be checking to make sure that it's not duplicating them. The labels need to be known by the policy, yes.
That's why we have the admin library.
That's why we're documenting what labels are used by the policy for what purpose.
And during installation, we have two approaches, right? We may generate a unique label based on what's already in the system, or use some identifier passed from the App Store, for example. In the App Store, for sure, you need to have some way to identify them. So those are two approaches. I'm not sure exactly which, I don't remember which one was chosen, or is it already to be chosen? I don't know. But there are ways to do it.
For which?
For choosing unique identifier for each app.
I'm not sure that... Because we're in the because the application installer is in the process of development at this point, yes. I can't say for sure exactly what they've chosen.
Yes, but we will assure you that this will be unique. If you're installing application and trying to, for example, have a context, you begin and end, and between those two calls, you are installing one application, right? One piece of it. If you give us application ID that was used previously, I guess we would probably need to return error. If we would rely on you to provide us the data, but I think maybe generating the unique thing on the device maybe would be better.
My recollection is that in Tizen 2, the label is chosen, and it's based on the signature.
Yes, it's always passed from
which is a cryptographically unique identifier.
Yes.
So that's one of the nice things about using a text string. Is that you can say, well, here's something that I've already generated for this other purpose that I know is unique. Well, no point in having two of those because we're lazy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you're an application developer at this point, in the Sonaro era, all right, you just say what privileges you want, what W3C privileges you want, and you're done. Because the SMAC information is all going to get taken care of by the installer. If your app is going to try to do things like access files in places where it shouldn't be, that aren't defined by the Windows runtime environment, the web runtime environment. I always hate it when I make that slip. If you're counting on what the web runtime environment is defining, then you're going to be very happy. If you're trying to do things that are sneaky, the system is going to prevent you from doing that, which is exactly what it's supposed to do. Okay, that's reading the manifest. So you write the manifest. All right, the installer is going to read the manifest. And first off, if you've done something illegitimate, it's going to not install the application because it's a good installer. If you've asked for legitimate things, then you'll be fine. Yeah, everything will work just the way it's supposed to. You're not worried about SMAC at all as an application developer. And that's probably a good thing. We don't want application developers worrying too much about security.
So simply because SMAC is laid down deep in the operating system. You're labeling your resources like /dev something, right? Application developers shouldn't care about it. So it's on our side totally. All you need to do is properly make up your manifest. If you're using API, please check what kind of privilege you need for it. Maybe it's unprivileged. Maybe your API is unprivileged and you don't need to fill the manifest with that section. That's fine. But if you do, please make it right so that your application during installation time is properly set up. So later in the runtime, you only get the access to the APIs you really need.
And this is that's the intention of W3C, that you as an application developer simply say, here's these abstract privileges. I don't care how the underlying operating system implements them. A service provides...
I will come back to the picture.
What happens here is that a service provides the resource. So it might be that you want to send a noise out to the speaker. Well, you use the sound service. So the application sends a message over to the sound service and says, squawk or tweet or whatever kind of noise you want. And it says, are you allowed to do this? The answer is yes. The answer is no. It doesn't matter which, in the grand scheme of things, whichever it is the correct thing. In a service-oriented environment, that's exactly what you want to have. And you're doing it in such a way that the underlying operating system implementation doesn't matter because you're actually using a service to provide this.
So Sonaro is kind of policeman. It tells yes or no, is it? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, it's a very small piece of code that you just saw, like three APIs to call in one part. We're planning to prepare synchronous and asynchronous APIs for all possible cases there may be, and basically work on dev mailing list, on Tizen.org public mailing list, right, to make it possible for everyone to tell us what's the use case you need. Right now, we're experimenting the crosswalk with Crosswalk, right? The application launcher web runtime environment new in Tizen 3.0. So we are in close work together to make it right. Like the first example will be Crosswalk. I see you have a question. Okay, kernel is not required to do it. No, of course not. In 3.0, it's divided into layers so that we have only few smack labels, as few as possible, to make it easy to maintain. So applications have one set of labels. All services, for example, have, let's say, for instance, one label.
Well, there are two, actually. There's user.
Yeah. Let's say in AVI we have A and B, right? So everything is talking with A and B. So application have all, okay, application has some set of smack rules, but it's a very small set. It only interfaces these resources via service. In general, service-oriented, like Cassie said, is more secure because you're hiding the resource you actually want to use behind the service, and the service is only the only one privileged to do it. Direct resource access that was quite popular in 2.2, as you remember, it has some issues with overlapping smack rules, with security in general. Like if you had two privileges, you accidentally gain another one, even though you haven't required it because smack rules actually overlap. There was this kind of problem, and we are going to fix it with this design.
There's a talk later today by Rice University about some of the things they discovered when they did the security analysis on Tizen 2.
Do I believe we have a speaker here?
I certainly encourage people to go see that.
Who's first? I don't know. Maybe the guy in the first row first.
Does this reduce the size of the policy database? Yes. Massively. So the speed gain, but you mean between pull kit and Cynara is primarily an artifact of the mechanism that's used to store the decision. In pull kit, they went overboard to make it general and generic, and it's like, well, you want to make a decision? You write a program that gives me the answer.
No, because in 2.2 there is no such mechanism. PolkIt was not there.
Yeah. You don't get a speed gain over 2.2. However, we get this. Well, not only we get rather than having an enormous smack policy, we have a small smack policy and a small Cynara policy. And now we can understand it. If there's a problem, we know where to look, as opposed to having thousands of things to look at and say, well, why is this the way it is? Well, because we need this, and it has that implication and this side effect. And it's like, yeah. Keeping things simple is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Unix domain sockets. Okay. That's a great question. And the answer is that the mechanism that the service uses to get the attributes of the client is an out-of-band kernel protocol called PeerSec. So it's actually using a kernel-based interface to get the attributes of the client. The client does nothing to provide information.
Yeah, the Cynara client library versus Cynara process. What is the protocol? I understand your question. Yes. Okay. So, to all guys who maybe didn't hear you, the question is: you have Cynara client, you have the service, Cynara service, I mean, right? And there is some our own IPC that we just coded, right, over Unix domain sockets to make it possible. Is the protocol open to make other kinds of right API versions possible? Well, it's open source. There is no problem with using it. Right now, we are not using a dedicated service. We are using some other module that already did pretty similar thing. So we are just creating the service. If you would like to have API that does something in a little bit different way, for example, asynchronous API, maybe asynchronous API that exposes the socket for you so you can pull select on it, right? It's open. It's up there. You can use it, of course. Yes,
yep.
That's it. It's extremely simple right now, and I think it should stay this way. Yes. It's open source. We are planning, on the last slide, we are planning to move the development to the GitHub. Because we think, okay, if it's doing something a little bit better, far much better than Polkit, why not let everybody use it? If they want, why not? It's right now only a Tizen.org repository, so it's already open source, but we think it should be generic. So we would like to put it on GitHub. And this is ongoing, some procedures and stuff like that, but it's ongoing. It will be on GitHub. So if you want to have some specific, if you have specific needs for the API, for like a wrapper for the APIs, you can do it. It's not a problem.
Okay, so next. You again. We are not using Dbus.
No.
Okay, this does not replace SMAC. SMAC is a kernel level, an operating system level mechanism. The problem we've got is that W3C and other various agencies love to define things in abstractions. And the Linux kernel doesn't do abstractions. It does, here's a process, here's a file. We're not going to get fuzzy here and say whether this is, is that a telephony resource? Well, it's a telephony resource, but it's also a resource for the address database. Well, so what does that mean when you're trying to do the access control decision? Well, the document doesn't really say what it is because it's context dependent, and it may depend on the time of day for whatever. So this is, when you're talking about something that's in an abstract like that, you really want it to be up in application space. When you're talking about really protecting this file from that process, that's when you're down in the kernel. That's what we're using SMAC for. We're using SMAC to actually protect the operating system objects from operating system subjects. When we're talking about application space apps and resources, that's a different security model by fiat. And so we have to actually deal with that directly.
SMAC is complementing. SMAC and Synara are complementing each other.
Yeah, they're very complementary. And we're using one as a tool to help implement the other because we actually have a good solid mechanism for identification. And that's why Synara is using the SMAC label to identify the application, because we have to do that anyway. It's an application component that utilizes the behavior of the LSM. And you can quote me on that. So anybody else? Going once, going twice. Is there any using Polkit?
Using
Synara? Not yet?
Not yet. We hope it will be.
That's
why we'd rather put it in GitHub.
Yeah, I'm not holding out for Red Hat, but but we'll see. Anybody else? All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening, guys.